invite Mark Lawrence to come and share a scripture.
I'm reading from Matthew chapter 25, 34 through 40. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you as a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me."
It's good to be back from our week of vacation. I want to thank Andrea Mooney and Tony Lister for preaching and leading in worship the two Sundays I was away. And I am going away again this week with Tony and Barb Fry and Bill Abels and Tina Hilsdorf on a retreat down in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, wisdom school in the tradition of Cynthia Bourgeau. So look forward to seeing how we are changed and shaped by that experience and sharing that with you when we come back. Bill and I did have a good time on our vacation. We went south to North Georgia and South Carolina, had time with family, time in the mountains and at the beach, lots of sweet tea, biscuits, fried green tomatoes, fried okra, pole beans, field peas, cantaloupe, and sliced tomatoes. Bill only eats cantaloupe when he's in North Georgia, because his grandmother always had cantaloupe and sliced tomatoes on the table in the summertime. But when I come back today to the pulpit, it was hard to know what I needed to say, because it seems to me it's been a difficult couple of weeks in our country. And as a pastor, I'm very cautious when it comes to talking about what's going on politically. But it seemed like there were some things I needed to say, to speak to. So as always, I will say, if I tread on your toes, I'm sorry. And I'm always open to conversation. Generally, I know my audience here. So if anything, I think I'm in danger of saying too much because it's so easy. But for those of us who care about being a pluralistic, diverse, multicultural, democratic society, there's a lot to be disturbed about in the last couple weeks. As our own Judd Kilgore wrote in a letter he sent to the Ithaca Journal, he always copies me in. It's not that all of this is new to our country. In fact, it's frighteningly familiar. But we wanted to believe we were moving beyond all of this. We wanted to think we'd made progress and that this kind of thing was our history, but not our present reality. But the rhetoric seems to keep ramping up and the actions seem to keep getting worse. We are still seeing thousands and thousands of people, including children who have been separated from their families, being held in detention centers for the crime of asking for help, for daring to try to come here to make a new life. And now we are seeing women of color who are citizens and elected representatives being told to go back where they came from. And since I wrote this yesterday, there's been more attacks on an elected representative who's a convenient target because he is a person of color. Of course, for the four women, the one who got targeted the most was the Muslim who came here as a refugee. She was the one singled out most. But all of them are being attacked and labeled as unpatriotic and un-American for daring to disagree daring to criticize our leadership. To me, this is wrong and it is dangerous because it puts at risk all Americans who are persons of color, who are different ethnically or religiously or culturally, all those who can somehow be labeled as other, who don't fit the myth of the white, Christian, heterosexual, native-born American who's labeled as the real American. That despite the fact that those we who are part of that group are the ones who discriminated against the first and only real Native Americans. It's un-American. It's a failure to live up to the best of our ideals. And for us as Christians, it raises all sorts of problems. Because the social and ethical teachings of the Bible are clear and unambiguous. As I said in the young people's time, the Old Testament has multiple places in Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy where we are commanded to care for the widow and the orphan, and how many at the border are widows and orphans, and the foreigner. Different words are used in different translations. Foreigner, sojourner, alien, stranger. Remembering their own experiences in Egypt, the people of Israel were to be compassionate and just in their treatment of foreigners. They were to leave gleanings extra in the fields and in the vineyards so the poor could find food to eat. They were to judge foreigners by the same laws they judged themselves. And the Old Testament prophets cried out again and again against those who dared to abuse the poor and take advantage of the vulnerable, including foreigners. The God of the Old Testament is a God who sides with the poor, who speaks for the vulnerable, and who calls on his people to welcome strangers. Jesus was also very clear in his teachings. Two of the most well-known stories he told are the Good Samaritan story in Luke 10 and the story of the judgment, which Mark read an excerpt from just now in Matthew 25. Tony talked some last week about the Good Samaritan story. When a man who came to question Jesus about how he should live, and Jesus said to him, "Well, how do you summarize the teaching? What does the Torah say?" The man said, "Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and spirit, and love your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said, "You're right. You got it. Do this, and you shall live." But then the man, as the scripture says, seeking to justify himself, asked the question, "Well, okay, but who is my neighbor?" And Jesus begins to tell the story of the man who's injured and the two religious leaders who pass by and the Samaritan, the foreigner, the stranger, who is the one who acts with compassion. We miss the shock value because we know the story so well, don't we? Who is the Samaritan to us today? Who's the person we can least imagine being loving and compassionate if we had a problem? Is it the radicalized Muslim? Or is it the diehard Christian fundamentalist with the red MAGA hat on his head? Who is our neighbor? And what does it mean to act as a neighbor to those who need us? Matthew 25 expands Jesus' teaching. The scene is one of judgment. The Son of Man, Jesus the Christ, returning, measuring people, but not measuring or judging them based on how religious they are. It's not about moral goodness. It's not about piety. Our judgment, Jesus taught, will be based on how we treat other people, the sick, the poor, the prisoner, the stranger. In as much as you have done it to one of the least of these, you did it unto me, Jesus said. So Christ is in the other. Christ is in the sick and the prisoner. Christ is in the refugees fleeing famine and war. Christ is in the poor here in our own community and across the world. Christ is in the migrants trying to escape violence and gangs and corrupt police officers, trying to find a place to live and work and be safe. Christ is with all those waiting in desperation at borders, and all those risking their lives trying to find a safe place. Christ is in all those strangers, those foreigners, those who so easily get labeled as illegal and dismissed, those strangers who are such easy targets for discrimination, such easy victims of abuse. Those strangers who can be used by politicians to whip up anxiety and fear. Those strangers are faces of Jesus in our time. And we are called to respond, called to find ways to show care to those strangers because they are our neighbors. Those strangers who are the least of these, we're commanded to welcome them, to offer hospitality, to treat them as Jesus himself. Andrea Mooney 2 weeks ago talked about not turning away from what is happening, even though we want to. We are called to bear witness to what is going on, to try to open our hearts and minds to the suffering and the pain that is happening. It's really hard. And I don't want to. I want to turn off the radio. I want to turn off the news. I don't want to look at the pictures. I don't want to believe it's happening. But we are called to see it and to find ways to respond, even if all we can do in the moment is simply to see and to pray. We are called to be advocates by contacting our elected representatives, by showing up at vigils like the ones that happen on the Commons every Monday at 5:30. We're called to support those who are helping. Andrea shared names of organizations who are working with children on the southern border, and they're on a paper right over there on the table. A good friend of ours shared this week on Facebook about a group that she personally knows about, a friend of hers is working with them, that's working on the Texas-Mexico border to help people on both sides, working to bring different churches together to help them get the resources they need. And there's information about that on the table too, as well as about what the Baptist Peace Fellowship is doing, organizing an immersion experience later this month. And I printed out the list of all the different groups they're going to interact with as a part of that. So even if we can't go, we can explore and learn more about what those groups are doing. Here in Ithaca, there are undocumented immigrants seeking help. Some need sanctuary to avoid detention or deportation while they try to fight their way through the legal processes. A number of us signed a letter of support back in May for First Congregational Church as they voted to become a sanctuary congregation. Now they need some money to get a security system and a better bathroom before they can really house anybody for any length of time. We can be a part of that. Leslie Schultz and Bill Abels, as part of the Ithaca Sanctuary Alliance, have volunteered to do a fundraising dinner in early October. You can talk with them. You can help make that event happen. So we are all called to find ways to respond, to help these strangers who are our neighbors in their time of need. And we're also called to find ways to help those, all of those, who feel threatened and targeted by what's happening in our country. I had a conversation this week with a Karen woman from Burma who's been here in Ithaca about 10 years. She and her family have made a life here. Her kids are at LACS and DeWitt Middle School. Her husband's working somewhere at Cornell, and she's finishing a human services degree at TC3. They've all become citizens. And yet, near the end of our conversation, as I ask a little more about why her family left Burma, and she talked about the persecution they knew there, she said, "But now here, everyone doesn't like refugees." And I said, "No, not everyone. Yes, some people, but no, not everyone. Many of us are very glad you are here." She, like most refugees, couldn't possibly go back to where she came from. They fled because their villages and crops were being burned, and their men were being conscripted as porters for the Burmese military, and their women were being victims of sexual assault. They have no reason still to believe the current government in Myanmar will be any more supportive than the government of 10 and 15, 20 years ago. "They make promises," she said, "but 2 or 3 months later, the same things happen." So how many more, like Paul Beller, right now in our country, are anxious and frightened, right here in Ithaca? And what are ways we can find to reach out as individuals in a church? How are we being called to stand with people who are feeling marginalized and targeted? People who are getting labeled as those strangers. This past week on my Facebook feed, a post popped up from a guy who graduated with me from high school. In spite of the fact that I went to high school and lived in other countries, I ended up my 12th grade year in Kings Mountain, North Carolina. We had lived there my 7th grade and again came back for my 12th grade because First Baptist Church had a nice missionary house. John, this guy, was a part of my church and my high school. I even saw him some during college because he went to NC State University and I was at Wake Forest, and we were both part of some statewide Baptist student happenings that went on. John was a sweet guy, one of the nicest guys I knew in that high school. I haven't seen John in 40 years, but when I got on Facebook a few years ago, one of my main motivations was sort of connecting with old friends and being able to know what was happening. So John was one of those people that at some point I friended. And I could tell he's way more conservative, but I just sort of ignored that. And, well, it's nice to know where John is. But this last week, a post showed up on his feed that really, really got to me. It was a post he had copied and pasted. Someone defending the events at their rally in Greenville, North Carolina, defending the attacks on the immigrants and on the congresswomen. It was a post full of anti-immigrant nativist language. I prayed about it, but in light of all that's happening, I finally decided I needed to do a little something. If nothing else, I didn't want to consent by my silence. So I posted a few questions back. When does an immigrant get to be considered an American? Does an immigrant who is a citizen have the right to criticize or point out problems? When do immigrants get to be part of us and not always seen as them? The immigrants I know love America too. Why does our president feel the need to attack them? He's the grandson of an immigrant. His wife is an immigrant. The response I got back was even more shocking somehow, maybe because it seems so full of things that I just am convinced are not true and so close to any dialogue, but maybe more because I knew they were John's own words written directly to me. If your immigrant friends are like mine and truly love this country, then they're not who the president is talking about. He's talking about the millions who are coming here illegally, not contributing to a peaceful society, looking for a handout, looking for a free ride on the backs of hardworking Americans, invading this great land and imposing their wants and their beliefs on us. That's wrong. You do realize they would behead you just because you're a Christian. If they don't like it here, they should go pack up and leave. As the post said, "These are my beliefs. They're not up for debate." Really? Really? He believes this. Who is this man and what country does he live in? What church does he attend? And I know he does attend a church. How do the members of his church and his pastor reconcile what they now believe and their politics with Jesus? The man writing those words is such a stranger to me, such an alien. He knows immigrants, but he still believes this stuff. I read Fox News sometimes. I listen to right-wing radio some days for a little bit, as long as I can stand it, trying to understand these strangers, trying to understand their worldview and the perspective. These strangers who believe these things, these strangers who feel so threatened. Do you hear the fear in his response? So afraid. Who believe that their Christian faith and their way of life is somehow under attack, under this terrible threat. These strangers are our neighbors too. Even though they feel like enemies, and let's admit it, they do much of the time. Jesus said we had to love our enemies, to pray for those who persecute us, to love those who oppose us. So this somehow is our calling too. And it is so hard in these incredibly divisive and polarized times with political leadership, I would say on both sides, that is feeding at points our differences and gaining power by ramping us up to turn against each other. In these times, how do we respond to these strangers, these fellow Christians, these fellow Americans? When are we called to speak out, to stand up? When is it better just to be friendly and talk about nothing that matters? Time spent with Bill's cousins last week raised some of the same questions. Their different viewpoints and different sources of news information can make them feel like strangers, like we're not living in the same reality, not part of the same country. But we know each other, and we love each other, and we're family. So how do we respond? Did I say too much last week? Did I challenge too much? Bill says I make him nervous. I'm not sure. I don't think of myself as this big challenger. And yet, when his cousin said that New York law about abortion that made abortion legal up to like the day before for anybody, and I said, that's not true. That's not what it says. At least with them, there was opportunities for dialogue. There was opportunities for conversation. And there was also opportunities to balance the more heated things with time spent asking about their family and how they're doing and offering support for the difficult things going on in their lives. But how? How do we find ways to be neighbors to the strangers all around us? Christ calls us to follow him in these difficult times, to seek his face, to seek his presence in all those around us. Jesus is in all the strangers, in the immigrant and the undocumented worker, the refugee and asylum seeker, and those who have been here for thousands of years and yet are oppressed, and in those who are privileged by their place of birth and the color of their skin, and yet they too are so afraid. God knows their fears. God knows their pain and suffering. God knows their goodness and their capacity for evil, just as God knows ours. We are all children of the same God, all one great family. We are all strangers called to be neighbors, to dare to open our eyes and our hearts, to see each other's pain and struggles, and to risk reaching out somehow in ways that we can. Christ calls us to compassion, and he calls us to courage. And those strangers, whoever is most strange, most foreign, most alien to us, they are our neighbors. They are our sisters and brothers. God help us. God empower us. God teach us to love.